they could do it, and then they wouldn't have to stress about it and struggle with figuring out how they're going to get the gas money to maybe go to that next step. These things would just be so much easier, and it would be such a major help for our programs. And I think that many of, you know, people have brought up the question, well, is it going to take away from some of those other programs? We don't think that at all. I think many of our programs are so excited about the idea of having one spot where somebody maybe goes to that spot, then they can come to us and get the other services that they need and get the support that they need and get the help with the long-term, you know, avenues, things they need to do. That would be so much more helpful for us. I just really, again, just want to emphasize that it's something that we're very excited about in the DV community. We want to see these things happen, and we really want to support and do as much as we can actually to make it move forward. So appreciate your support.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm here.
Move the microphone a little closer.
That's okay. I'm here today not as a victim, but as a survivor, to give you a little bit of an insight. I'm a single mom with four boys. And you walk into buildings not knowing what you're going to face or who you're going to talk to or how many people you have to talk to before you get the help that you need. My biggest thing, my biggest, greatest thing is to see this open. Because to get a restraining order right now, you have to go downtown. There's only a certain window at the courthouse where you can get a restraining order. If it takes you a long time to get through the process of filling out the paperwork, you have to go again the next day. Finding childcare is not always easy. Going alone is a big feat. Being able to walk in and talk to people and have somebody help you all at one place where you can even talk to a DA, you can talk to a police officer, to be strong enough to walk in there is hard enough to do. Because when you get to the system and you have to go to those different buildings, you get put on a waiting list, sometimes even up to a month. It's easier to go back. It's easier to be a statistic. It's easier to say, you know what? I know what he's capable of doing. I don't know how bad it's going to be, but I can watch his temper and I can watch his shifting and changing. And it's easier to go back because you're not on the streets. Shelters sometimes don't take boys over 10. Sometimes shelters won't take more than 2 children. And just getting to those locations sometimes is so hard. It's just easier to go back. And so to see a one-stop center in the Portland metro area would be a great step for all survivors and even victims so they can become survivors.
Thank you. Thank you. Chris.
Good morning, Mayor Potter and commissioners. I want to thank Sonia for her strength and courage in being here today. And thanks for the opportunity to speak to you. I am speaking as, like Tana, one of the representatives of the community-based domestic violence victim services agencies, which really constitute a system. And our system consists of 14 nonprofit agencies, and we're all working together as hard as we can to provide a continuum of services that range from prevention to early intervention to long-term advocacy post-crisis. We work together to provide a meaningful response at any point along that continuum to survivors that may come in with a varying range of levels of danger, different forms of abuse, multiple forms of abuse, and a broad range of individual needs. We've, as a system, long recognized the need to create multiple points of access, and that's been talked about a lot today, having lots of entry points. It's a core belief in our system. And we also work very hard and value strongly working collaboratively, not only amongst ourselves, but across systems, because there are so many disciplines that come into play in a domestic violence survivor's life. And many of those institutions have incredible power over her life and in what might happen with herself and her children. We've long been aware of the complexity of services, and I think a lot of what we've talked about so far today are logistical barriers to entering services and accessing resources. There are also a lot of other issues that intertwine with domestic violence, that I want to just give you an example of. In the 5,000 survivors and their children that we worked with last year at Home Free, here are some of the barriers that they faced. 56% had a mental health history. 25% were disabled. 43% some kind of chemical dependency history. Some of them had themselves an arrest history, which creates a huge barrier to housing and accessing many of the services that they need. More than 93% of them had experienced multiple forms of abuse, and in many cases, more than one abuser in their life. Many of them had been stalked, sexually assaulted by their partner, as well as by strangers. 86% of them were living in poverty. And in 83% of the cases where there were children involved, they had witnessed the abuse. So there's an enormous and complex web of issues that they come into services with and needing help for. At Home Free, at our program, each time we celebrate and recognize the gains that a survivor's been able to make, in part because of our effective advocacy and collaborations, we also think about the many hundreds and maybe even thousands of other survivors that are out there that are facing these intimidating institutions without that guiding hand to help them through and navigate their way through. The one-stop center we really see as a potentially vital starting point for many, many survivors who would otherwise be trying to find their way through these systems on their own. Home Free and other community-based domestic violence providers really do look forward to integrating the one-stop center into the range of services that are available now and the network of resources that we have created for survivors. We, the domestic violence provider system, are a vital force, and we want to work with this effort in terms of ensuring that it capitalizes on the existing collaboration, really is an augmentation of what we're doing, and that its development is ongoingly informed by the profound knowledge, best practices, and cooperative approach to seeking funding and support that have defined our system for at least the past two decades here in the Portland area. And I would welcome any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Question on the crisis line, sort of how that seems to be I was just searching here under Domestic Violence Portland, and that pulls up as a very visible link. Mm-hmm. For information, how is their involvement in this? What is it?
Well, they have definitely indicated interest in being one of the on-site partners. And I think it's interesting to note that every shelter has a 24-hour crisis line, but the Portland Women's Crisis Line has really been the closest that we've had to a centralized crisis line that could be the one place that survivors call. And I think that the one-stop center could really boost that effort and facilitate the ease of getting into the system when it's started by a phone call.
So have they been a key partner in putting this together?
They weren't involved in the steering committee, but they were definitely a key informant and participated in the focus groups and have had conversations with the consultants about their availability and willingness to participate in the effort, yeah.
Thanks.
Sure.
Thank you. Our last panel. Thank you. Is Chiquita Rollins, member of the steering committee, Ed Hall, City of Portland firefighter, and our district attorney, Mike Schrunk.
Morning, Mayor Potter and City Commissioners. My name is Chiquita Rollins. I'm the Multnomah County Domestic Violence Coordinator. And again, to give you just a little brief history, I've held that position since 1994 when it was established as a joint city-county position. In this role, I provide consultation, technical assistance, and training to both the city and the county governments. I also provide staffing to the Family Violence Coordinating Council, which has, since 1987, been a central body for coordination, refinement, and development of services for victims and intervention for perpetrators of domestic violence. And it's my role and the role of the council to hold sort of the 5,000 or the 10,000-foot view of the system and the services that are being developed and the needs and the gaps in those services. And so I want to speak from that perspective. Before I do so, I want to address Commissioner Adams' question about, is the existence of the one-stop going to stop the need for that 93 phone numbers and get and provide easier access for victims into the services, that the specific services they need? No, we'll keep that list because different victims need different things. But I think what Kay didn't talk about is the concept of navigators that are core to this one-stop center, and that's someone who will do the intake assessment with the victim as she comes into the center, and then keep in touch with that victim regardless of what services the victim chooses to select from what's going to be at the one-stop center, so that and make it easier to access other services. So it might be a phone call to someone that they know at Department of Human Services and saying, hi, I have a person here who you all turned down for the domestic violence grant, and I think that's not right. Can you work with me on how to get her that money or whatever? So I think that's going to augment that list and make it easier access. Does that help answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Great. So one of the things I want to say about the center is that I think one of the reasons this is such a perfect moment to bring this forward and to thank Commissioner Saltzman for his leadership in this is that we have in place some of the best collaborative efforts that I've ever known in the system since 1991, actually, when I first started going to the Coordinating Council. Sergeant Stewart didn't get to talk about the Domestic Violence Reduction Unit, but as you all know, we have victim service advocates that the city funds working there, co-located with them, have a great collaborative relationship, very strong relationship to the advantage of both systems, both the victim services system and the law enforcement system. We also have a project out at Gateway called the Domestic Violence Enhanced Response Team, which broadens that collaboration beyond the Portland Police Bureau and victim advocates to include probation, the district attorney's office, DHS public assistance side of Department of Human Services, and the child welfare side, Gresham Police, Troutdale, Fairview, and other law enforcement officers, departments in the county. So we have this really strong collaboration going on. We have, for the last 2 years, many of us in this room have worked with the Department of Human Services to improve their response to domestic violence. So I think there's an eagerness in the community at large to figure out how to provide better services. There's good collaborative relationships, and this one-stop fits very well within that kind of model. The one other thing I wanted to talk to you about is in 2001, my office convened a planning process to look at the community-based victim services system, and in 2002 published a report. And one of the highest priorities for new services was what we were calling in those days a multidisciplinary domestic violence walk-in center that looks very much like the one-stop concept that Kay talked to you all about. And so it's clear that this one-stop victim service center fits within the intent and the models that the Coordinating Council has espoused since 1987 when it was founded. It's within the plan for the Victim Services Center that has been developed through my office. And I think it's been mentioned, but I want to sort of restate to you that victims of children and their children need a wide array of services, but they don't all need the same services. And so to have the ability to have victims bring their children and have at one place this array of services that they know they can access if they want it, it's easy access for them, there's a multidisciplinary response if they want it, is really important and will make their lives easier, make it easier for them to obtain safety and to maintain safety once they've done that. So it's my belief, from my 5,000-foot view of the system, that this one-stop center would be an important addition to the system of victim services currently available in Portland for victims and their children. It would provide an accessible, holistic, and multidisciplinary response to many of their complex needs. And I think that the feasibility study has been a very important step toward establishment of that kind of center. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you and for your support for the feasibility study and for the collaboration that goes on in the Portland Police Bureau.
Thank you. Good morning. Mike Schrunk, your district attorney. Let me, first of all, congratulate you on the first part of your council session this morning. It was a pleasure to see the men, young men and women from Grant, Jefferson, and the kudos to the Portland State. I see my alma maters are displayed up here, but that's our future, and that's good that you recognize them. But another thing, let me recall that when you heard Rod Underhill, one of my chief deputies, tell you that he'd been working on this for a decade and a half, I looked at Mr. Mayor Tom, and I thought, Mr. Mayor, how long have you and I been working on this problem? You know, we're looking at 3 and 4 decades that we've been dealing with it for. So it's high time, and I want to congratulate Commissioner Salzman, and Jeff Kogan from the County Commission for their leadership and their working. This is long overdue. We've worked in the domestic violence area for a good long time. We've seen people chased around. We've lost victims. Victims have got tired and fed up. The one stop makes abundant good sense. And I congratulate all of you for this time you've spent on the council calendar, but also for getting behind this. It is very, very important. We need access. The three things that I've learned in your almost 3 decades as your district attorney is we don't take very good care of our children, our partners, and our elderly. And this we've satisfied right here. You're talking about the domestic violence, our partners. We solved a little bit of that working with the multidisciplinary team in the Gateway area when that was created through the joint efforts of the city and county and the other cities within the region. This is another gigantic step forward, and I applaud you for working. You've heard the statistics. You've done it right. Your feasibility study is loaded with good best practices, with good documentation of the need and the benefits. Just looking quickly at San Diego, they went from 70% of victims unwilling to proceed to 70% of victims willing to proceed with their one-stop center. Better services, easier for law enforcement, less trials when we can gather information right away, up front, get cooperation, get people going the right direction. This isn't a lock people up program. This is a community enhancement program. This builds the culture. Prevention's best. Chiquita can preach that forever, but we know some will slip by. So thank you for your leadership in this, and we are 100% behind you.
Thank you.
Ed. Good morning. So at first blush, it may seem like kind of an odd connection for the Fire Bureau to be here involved in domestic violence, but bring you back to our mission in the Fire Bureau. The primary goal of it is protecting life. And we're constantly looking for resources and tools that will help us do a better job. And while obviously, you know, we look and it's fire, you know, fires that we perform our rescues at, and that seems to be where our mission came from. But we have expanded that over the years. And as most of you are probably aware, we are the first responders to emergencies of all kinds, and especially medical emergencies here in the city of Portland. We're trained as paramedics, we're trained as emergency medical technicians, and we are often the very first people to show up on instances like domestic violence. But more importantly is, excuse me, are not the calls that are the routine, where you show up and there are police there, there's an ambulance there, and there are resources readily available. Oftentimes, these scenarios play out by someone calling for something else, where you show up and we're there called to check on some sore ribs that happened somehow a couple of days before. We're there to check on a child that has some sort of, you know, a headache that's happened for the last few days. Or you come to somebody who wants to check on their blurred vision from a swollen eye that they really can't tell you exactly how it happened. But as over the years, you can look and you get a hunch of how these things are happening to these people. And I can't tell you just how valuable it would be to have a card or a folder, something that we could give, you know, because there's more than bandages that needs to be done in these instances, as you all are I'm sure, aware. But when we're done doing the first aid work, to have something that we could hand to give somebody a place, a single place to go where they can move on to becoming survivors instead of just repeated victims. In our fire engines right now, we carry a piece of paper that says, what do you do after the fire's out? Just to help people go through the hurdles. Or, you know, what's the next step? What do you have to be aware of? We should have that same resource for people who are victims of domestic violence. And I really encourage your support of this and your continued work. And thank you very much.
Thank you, folks.
That completes our invited testimony. I don't know if anybody...
We have one person signed up. Teresa Teeter.
Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. I highly applaud this whole concept. It's way long overdue. My experience myself with domestic violence has been about, my daughter will be 34, April Fool's Day, so 34 years ago, and all I had was a refurbished telephone that had one button you could push when my ex-husband was coming around to assault me again. And we pushed the button. It connected me to the police department. And I prayed to God that they could drive like bats out of hell to get there in time. They usually didn't. They'd get there after the damage was done. I had surgery to put my lip back on my mouth, get my teeth replaced, et cetera, et cetera. When we finally did start creating a domestic violence type thing, it was go down to the DA, pay $75 for a restraining order, and as soon as the restraining order was violated, you had to pay $75 for another one, and on and on and on. And so with this new system in place that you have, I've read everything in here really fast. The only thing I don't see is a child care room, and I see that and some of the other models in here, they had them, but they weren't supervised at all time. I think that when you have a woman come in, like when I myself had a 2.5-year-old on my hip, it's very distracting to try to take care of your 2-year-old, fill out paperwork, and calm down a little bit from whatever may have just happened the last evening or early in the morning or whatever. You need a child care room to be funded and that somebody in there to supervise these children. You also need to empower the police somehow through council, whatever, so that when they go on these situations of broken ribs like the other person just testified, the police officer can press the charges. We created that back in Lincoln, Nebraska, where they press the charges as soon as they see damage. Mine was always purple, yellow, green on my face, so all they had to do was go get my ex, charge him, and that was it. And that way it keeps the victim from getting re-assaulted from the perpetrator. And it helped a lot, believe me. I went through 8 major assaults, major MRIs, et cetera. Also, I'd like to see you get some law students come in and intern and learning how to do this type of thing. And this is the case of field of work that they want to go in. And the college that submits them, like Lewis and Clark, they can get college credit, and the college can make a donation back to the Domestic Violence Center to help fund operations. Also, you could have benchmarks could precipitate type of patterns that these women keep presenting. Like what we discovered back there was when it was time for the Super Bowl every year, that's when domestic violence issues increased in Lincoln, Nebraska. And so we would get these women to go do events by themselves away from their husbands. We'd try to intervene in the betting process so that they wouldn't bet all the family grocery money away, because once the money was gone, there's nothing to eat. So we did community action alerts. Also, school teachers, if you can get this through your one-stop shopping center, teachers should be able to report to this center if a child or the parent is listed or registered at this center, so they could, I've got 5 seconds, so they can help intervene with these situations. And thank you very much. And this is very good, but get that child care room so the parents can unwind while they're doing their paperwork. Thank you.
This is a report. I need a motion to accept.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Well, I want to thank City Commissioner Dan Saltzman and County Commissioner Jeff Kogan and the entire steering committee for your excellent work on this. I look forward to going from here to your implementation work. It's very exciting, clearly needed, and I'm honored to vote aye.
Leonard.
Excellent presentation. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank everyone who participated in the study of the Domestic Violence One-Stop Service Center, and especially all the members of the steering committee, but also our focus groups, our key informant interviews, and other things. There's no doubt in my mind that the city of Portland would benefit greatly from having a domestic violence service center. I believe we owe it to the victims of domestic violence, their families, and children. As Captain Uehara stated, it's a necessary first step to stopping the cycle of violence in our families and our community. So I hope this report is just the first step in making this center a reality in Portland. Finally, I want to thank my staff person, Shannon Callahan, who's worked tirelessly on this effort along with our consultants from TAX. I want to thank you all, too, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Sten.
I also want to thank everybody. This is very tough work, and it's sad how pervasive it is, and it's also even sadder, I think, that we don't do more to expose what's going on in our communities and to help. And so I think this is a very good proposal. I want to thank Dan for his hard work on this. He's been very focused on our council and not accepted sometimes arguments that this isn't the city's issue because the county's in the lead. And it was also nice to hear some of the very good testimony from the police officers that are working hard on this. I do also want to just say very loudly that I remember in the last report that I looked at, the number one reason people were going back to their abusers was a lack of housing, and that an enormous number of women find themselves potentially homeless if they don't go back. And so I do want to make a very explicit link that I don't think anybody will argue with to our housing programs and trying to continue to make some tighter connections between what type of housing we choose to develop, both getting more resources for housing and also making a choice to target some of the housing dollars for this kind of use. I don't think anybody would disagree with that, but the one-stop center is going to be much more effective in helping people and then only as effective as housing and services that it can link people to. So I hope we'll keep that in mind and keep fighting for those dollars. So again, thanks, Commissioner Saltzman. I vote aye.
Potter.
About 40 years ago, as a young police officer, I had a regular route. I always went to the same house at least once a week. And it was always about domestic violence. And the husband would get drunk and then assault his wife in front of their children. And each week I went back, and I go back, and I go back, and I go back, because there were so very few resources. At the time, sometimes we could just tell folks, try to find a relative to stay with for a few days. Here's how you file a report or complaint with the district attorney's office. But there was just nothing there. And over the years, I think we've made a lot of improvements. I think this particular improvement takes it to another level. And it really makes it easier in that we stop victimizing victims twice and make sure that we eliminate all of the obstacles in them not only reporting but following through, which is so important. So I really appreciate Commissioner Saltzman's leadership, Commissioner Kogan's, and all the good folks who helped put this together. It's badly needed in our community, and I think it will be much appreciated. I vote aye.